Another attribute from the Maqam Ikhlaq is to help your friend. Those people who are close to one another, one thing is to help the needy, i.e. the poor, and one is to help one's friend. Helping the poor and the needy is a whole separate topic. Helping one's friend and fellow believer is a separate topic. All of us, I think, understand already the importance in our deen of helping the poor and needy, and perhaps have heard many discussions on that. But helping one's friend and fellow believer is something that many of us overlook. Sayyidina Rasulullah said that whomsoever, as long as they are trying to fulfill the need of their fellow believer, Allah Ta'ala will fulfill their need. So if you go and help a fellow believer on some need of theirs, or bring them some happiness, or bring them some relief from some difficulty, Allah Ta'ala will fulfill your need, or bring you happiness, or bring you relief from difficulty. One, for example, may be your traveling companion, and it may be, or it may be, for example, all of us in 10 days at the Kaf were companions with each other, or all the murids of one sheikh, they're also fellow companions on the spiritual path. So this is also a type of companionship. And Sharia has also honored this companionship. Now what happens normally is that if a person feels comfortable with a person, he becomes closer to them and then becomes even closer friends with them. And that means then they have greater rights over each other. But we should try to take care of our companions, be caring and considerate to our companions, and this should become our personality. There are some people who are totally inconsiderate of their companions. For example, they're sitting to eat and they're only concerned about their own eating. They're not looking whether the person left or right has the food within reach or needs something to be passed or may like something. They're completely selfishly, self-centered, looking at their own. And when the best dish comes, they want it to be stay in front of them, and they want it to stay right there. They don't want to circulate the better food. And Hazrat Murshid Ahmad used to get angry at that person who, when he used to eat, he wouldn't look left and right and see if his eating companions were able to eat as well as he would. And he would say, are you humans or are you animals? He used to say this word, are you insan or hewan? Because an animal is the one who grazes and he doesn't care what the animal to the left, right of him is doing. He'll eat all the grass, he won't care whether the other animals get anything or not. But human being is different, to try to offer the other person first, to try to want that they should get the better piece than you. So to prefer your fellow over yourself. That's why when you come in the masjid, and those who are the locals, take care of them and let them be in the first row. And for the new, it's not better for the new person to stand behind the imam. The muadhin is supposed to stand behind the imam. Even if a person understood the benefits of the first row, it's not necessary that you have to displace the locals in the masjid or the people who regularly pray there, or somebody you come to a masjid for the first time and try to stand right behind the imam, whereas in that masjid there may be a deputy imam or naib qari or muezzin who already normally stands in that place. And you will see just the same way people drive, they always want to overtake everyone. They don't let the other person cut in front of them. Even in parking, that there are people who are so inconsiderate that they're blocking the path of people when they park their cars, and then you have to make announcements of their license plates. So to be so inconsiderate of others, this is not this is displeasing to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Very displeasing. And a lot of this we are guilty of being inconsiderate. We have seen in some countries that if there is a railway crossing, then the car stops at the railway crossing. And we've seen people who are educated, have a master's or even professors, they will take out their car from line and put it in the other lane, which is the other way. So it's supposed to be two-way traffic, but all the people line up as if it's one way. So what does it mean? That this all of this person's education was not able to touch them one bit. So what is the value and effect of such an education? So we should be considerate of people in daily life and also in worship. Look in Tawaf, you'll see that there's so many people who are very inconsiderate. If there's a group going, let the group pass. No, they try to cut through the group. They will use elbows on other people to nudge somebody with an elbow to try to go in front of them. It means that you have no consideration. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't like such a person who causes difficulty for others. And there's an illness in this, and that illness, spiritual illness, is selfishness, self-centered. They only want their own benefit, their own individual benefit. They don't care about the benefit of others. Once it was Ramadan and there was a Malana, and somebody made a very tasty beverage and brought it in a whole jug. So the Malana, instead of sharing it with the other people in the masjid, he kept it with him. And as soon as Maghrib came, he poured one glass for himself and drank it. Then he poured a second glass for himself and drank it also. Then he poured a third glass and then he gave it to the person next to him. And then the rest that was left in the jug, he called students and said that here, distribute the rest. Now after three full glasses, there was hardly anything left in the jug, and then he gave the jug and said, distribute to everyone. Then he led the prayer. After doing the prayer, then he had another glass. After the third glass, then he needed to burp. So then when he burped, and he said that, oh mashallah, everybody's drank to their full today. But this is a real practical incident. So some people, they don't even realize. They're so selfish, they don't even notice the person next to them. And the Sharia doesn't like such a person. So a good person is the one who, that even if somebody is your companion for a short period of time, but still you should be considerate towards them. Allah Ta'ala doesn't like the inconsiderate person. Doesn't care about the other, has no feeling, is not even aware. No, the attribute of the believer is to be caring, considerate, respectful, watchful over the needs and interests of other believers. Sayyidina Abdullah bin Umar said that Sayyidina Rasulullah said that the best of the companions in Allah Ta'ala's regard is the one who is the best to his fellow companion. So the best of friends in Allah Ta'ala's regard is the one who is best towards his own friends. So we should try to prefer our friend over us, try to give them some ease, try to make their heart happy. And if we please their heart, then Allah Ta'ala will be pleased with our heart.
Thank you.
Abdullah bin Umar Rimallah Ta'ala used to say that that person who takes care of three things regarding their fellow believer, he will be a good companion. Number one, that he should say salam first. Whenever they meet, he should be try to be the first one to say salam. As a Khwaja Abdul Malik Siddiq used to practice this, that he was so fast in saying salam, it was very difficult for the other person to say salam to him. He was very quick in initiating the salam. So to be the first who says salam, this is the first thing. Second, that if he calls upon him, he should call him in a respectful, honorable way, or using in a respectful, honorable title. Because calling somebody other with a respectful manner is your own humility. And you will find that sometimes we don't use the word sahib with other people. For example, if his name is Ishfaq, we'll just say Ishfaq, Ishfaq, Ishfaq. No, but better in Urdu we would say Ishfaq sahib. That's more respectful, more appropriate. Even if you're friends, even if you have an informal relationship, but still you should mention the name with respect. Today the wives call their husbands on just the first name. And it's very difficult for the women to use any respectful title for their husband or to say the word sahib with their husband's name. Why? Because they're arrogant. And it's difficult to take this humble aspect. So can we not even have such dignity that we can call one another in a respectful manner, in a loving manner, in a way that has izzat and honor? Our Hazrat Murshamta used to be very stern about this. If somebody used to fail to call another companion respectfully, once there was a person who came to Hazrat Nabir today, he said, "Oh, X has come, so and so has come." He said, "That is he your brother that you're calling him by first name?" He said, "No." He said, "Who is that person?" "He's an alim." So then he said that he's a naibir, he's a deputy of the Prophet. You just take his name like that. And he got so angry with that person that who wouldn't take other people's names respectfully. Even if it was real brothers, if the person was an older brother, he would say you should call them respectfully. So the wife knows that if I say the word sahib along with my husband's name, so Allah Ta'ala will be pleased with me. So isn't it so easy to please Allah Ta'ala? What's the obstacle other than your own stubbornness or your own arrogance? That shaitan doesn't let you say it. The shaitan knows that if she says it, then she will get a lot of sawab. So he won't let her use an honorific title. So same three things. Number one, that be the first to say salam. Number two, to call the person by an honorific name. And third, that if somebody comes, you should make space for him in the majlis, in the gathering. So if you're sitting in the gathering and we've seen that people come on Hajj, if somebody comes, they don't even let him sit in the row. And there is space that yourself are sitting cross-legged, spread out wide. You could easily squeeze your own self together, sit in a more compact way, and the other person will get space, but they don't do that. And they will just let the person remain standing, and this is the house of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the person has come as a fellow worshipper, and we could easily make space for him in the row, but we don't. And we start fighting. But to make room for your brother, this is also part of honor. So that person who has these three signs, it means that they are somebody who takes care of their fellow brother. Mujahid Ramtan used to say that I kept the companionship of Sayyidina Umar radiallahu anhu, and I stayed with him. And I wanted that I should be of service to him. However, he used to be serving me. I wanted to be of service to him, but he used to be of service to me. So even though he was my teacher, so Abdullah bin Umar was the teacher and Mujahid Rahimullah Ta'ala was a tabi, he was the student. So the teacher was doing so much care of the student that the teacher was doing khidmat of the student. So the companion has a right over us. Abdul Malik ibn Marwan said that I am ashamed. He used to spend a lot of money on his companions, on their traveling needs, on their generally their needs. So somebody told him that you take a lot of care, spend a lot of money on whoever is your companion. So he responded that I am ashamed of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And what if Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala then I make dua to Allah Ta'ala for my friend, I should make jannah for him, and then I don't spend on him. Because how can I ask Allah Ta'ala to grant my friend jannah? It means give him so many blessings, and then I myself then be stingy with him. So if I want Allah Ta'ala to give my friend such a big blessing as jannah, so whatever blessings Allah Ta'ala has given me in this world, how can I not share it with them? How can I not spend it on him? And our Salaf Salihin, they gave living they were living testimonials to such pure character. Mujahid ibn Hassan Abdullah says, that a person, it would be such that they were such good friends to honor one another, then one of their friend passed away, so for 40 years after their friend passed away, he would support his friend's family and children who his friend left behind. Just why? Just because we used to be friends together. This is the love that Allah Ta'ala likes between people. This is the affection and caring affection Allah Ta'ala wants to see between people. And this is the special feature of the Deen of Islam. It's easy to say the word 40 years, but just imagine what that meant for 40 years to keep supporting your friend's wife and children. Amr bin Aus, he once told his son, that tell me, what is karam? What does it mean to honor someone? So the son responded, to be true and loyal in friendship, even in good times and in bad times. And today, we see that if somebody is in good times, then we're all best friends. And if the slightest of difficulty comes, then you'll be able to tell who is your friend and who is not. And then you won't be good friends. So Islam says, no, you can't be like that. You have to be as good as friends in good circumstances, and be as good friends in bad circumstances, as good as friends you were in the good circumstances. So Abu Ali al-Rati said that I kept the company of Abdullah al-Raji. And then
فقال أما أن تكون الأمير أو أنا
So somebody came and asked that, will you be the Amir in the journey, or should I be the Amir in the journey? Because the Sharia says that whenever even two people travel, one of them should be designated as the Amir. So that it's easy in traveling, one person makes the decisions, one person leads the way. So he said that, would you like to be the Amir, or should I become the Amir? So then he says, and I replied to him, that no, I would like that you should be the Amir. So then he replied, then you'll have to listen to me, whatever I say. He said, yes, I'm happy and ready to listen. So then, when he became Amir, he took all the stuff, the baggage together, and put it all in one big cloth and put it on top of his back. So then I told him that, oh, what are you doing? Why don't you give it some to me? So he said, that didn't I tell you that I'm the Amir and you're going to listen to me? Didn't you tell me that I'm the Amir and you will listen to me? So now you're going to have, it's incumbent upon you to obey. So I was quiet. So the whole journey he carried both of our baggage, and he was doing khidmat of me, and until it reached an extreme that that one night there was rainfall and there was no shelter around, and we were in the middle of the wilderness and it started raining. So he laid me down and he took out his shawl and held it over me like a canopy, and he stood like that the whole night long to protect me from the rain. And my state was that I was telling myself in my heart that, oh, I wish I'd rather died, and rather than telling him, I wish I hadn't told him that, oh, you are my Amir and I promised to listen to you. I was so embarrassed. But you hear from the story how considerate they were of their friend. These were those people who understood the ruh of Islam. They had the true thinking and wisdom of who and what a believer is. Abdul Mubarak went on the journey of Hajj, and people used to like to go with him for Hajj. So they would say that, make us your companion on your journey of Hajj. We won't find as good a guide as you. So he said, okay, fine, I'll be Amir of the journey. And he used to do khidmat of everyone. He used to pick up their baggage, he used to feed them, he used to give them water to drink. And he would tell them that, okay, you know, why don't I take care of all of your money on the journey? So all of you give me the money. So he used to take care of everybody's money. And all of the journey, because he himself was very rich. Abdul Mubarak was the son of a noble, wealthy family. He spent his own personal money on the whole group, and then on the way back, then everybody also needs to purchase some items or gifts for their family members they left behind. At that time, he would give them their money back and say, use your money to buy all of your gifts and presents for your family, because all of the expenses of Hajj up till now, I paid for them myself. For you. Lifting somebody's baggage up is sadaqah. Helping somebody mount their ride is sadaqah. Showing somebody the right direction is also sadaqah. So being of service to your companion is also a sadaqah. It means charity. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala told the Prophet Dawud alayhi salam that, O Dawud, that whenever you see anybody who is seeking for me, anybody who is in love with me, then you should just become his khadim. If you look at examples in the life of our Salaf Salihin, Sayyidina Rasulullah was once traveling on a journey and one Sahaba was with him. And at one point the Prophet made two miswaks. One was straight and well formed, and the other one turned out to be a bit crooked. So the Prophet gave the straight, nicer one to his Sahaba, his Sahabi, and the Sahabi told the Prophet, Ya Rasulullah, my heart wants that you should have the one that is more beautiful and give me the one that is crooked. And the Prophet said that my heart also wants that the beautiful one should be with you and the crooked one should be with me. Means the Prophet practically demonstrated that this is the right of the companion. Sayyidina Huzaifa, he was with the Prophet ﷺ, and it was hot summer, and the Prophet ﷺ went to a well and he started taking a bath, and there was nobody nearby, but still the Prophet ﷺ preferred to bathe behind a screen. So Sayyidina Huzaifa then held the shawl and used it to screen the Prophet ﷺ, and the Prophet ﷺ was on the other side of the shawl and bathing. So when the Prophet was done pouring water on himself, then the Prophet said that, Huzaifa, it's hot, just like I needed to take a bath to cool down, you also need to take a bath, I will hold the shawl for you. So Sayyidina Huzaifa said that, oh Prophet, that's not possible, I can't do that. And the Prophet said, no, just like I needed your help, you need my help, and I will hold the shawl for you. So the Prophet insisted on Sayyidina Huzaifa that you must bathe, and as long as Sayyidina Huzaifa kept bathing, the Prophet stood there and kept holding the shawl to cover and to screen Sayyidina Huzaifa while he was bathing. Sayyidina Anas, we mentioned this hadith before, that I was going in a caravan, a group of people on a journey, and there were some people who were fasting and there were some who weren't fasting. So the ones who were not fasting, they were picking up everybody's luggage and loading the luggage, and when they reached the destination, they quickly put tents and they pitched the tents so that the people who were fasting could easily break their fast. So when there's time to break the fast, the Prophet said that those who aren't fasting, Allah Ta'ala gave them more sawab than the ones who are fasting. The ones who are fasting got less sawab, and the ones who are doing khidmat of them got more sawab. That's why it said that when two people become friends, they should each try to fulfill the rights of the other in the best and better way. And this will become, make them both beloved to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Khwaja Abdullah Rahmatullah was a sheikh in Rasul Sa'adi Naqshbandiya. And Allah Ta'ala given him a lot of lands, agricultural lands. And at that day and age, his horses, he was so well off that his horses, the rings that by which he would tie and tether the horse, it was made of silver. And the tent pegs and rings were also made of silver. And Allah Ta'ala says that Allah Ta'ala loves to see the blessings that he has given his slave to be manifested. So it doesn't mean that if Allah Ta'ala gives somebody a lot of wealth, he says, no, I'm just going to keep wearing ragged clothes. He says, no, if you wear ragged clothes, is that going to help you in Akhirah? So Sharia says that no, if you, Allah Ta'ala has blessed you with wealth, then you should wear good clothes, and you can always give your old clothes away in sadaqah and charity. So the person who is well off has been told that you should wear good clothes. The Prophet ﷺ gave an example of this. That the Prophet ﷺ had a Yemeni shawl, and that Yemeni shawl was a price of, I think, 42,000, thousands of dirhams and dinars. The Prophet ﷺ bought it, wore it once, and then gave it away in sadaqah. Is there any clothing like that that a person, 41,000? So imagine if somebody got something for 41,000 riyals today, and then they wore it once, and they gave it away. So what was the Prophet trying to teach us by wearing it once? Was that even if you wear expensive clothes, you can wear it once out of to show your thanks for the blessings of Allah Ta'ala on you. Sheikh Abdul Qadir Jain wrote that sometimes when I had a lot of money, Allah Ta'ala would send ilham on me that, "Oh Abdul Qadir, wear fine clothing. I want to see you in beautiful clothing." So I would then get some fine clothing made and wear it. So this is called izhar-e-ni'ma. Izhar-e-tashakkur means to show your blessings and to show your appreciation for them. Khwaja Ahrar Rahmatullah, Allah Ta'ala gave him a lot of wealth. Once Maulana Abdul Rahman Jami Rahmatullah, he thought that, "Oh, I want to get bayat to somebody." So he asked around, and everybody told him that the most maqbool sheikh is Khwaja Bidl Ahrar Rahmatullah. Even the king of the time was bayat to him. And another strange thing about him was that if I was to become a sheikh and take murids, there would be no sheikh left who would have a murid. But Allah Ta'ala has told me I should focus on Ihya is Sunnah. So if I was just to become a sheikh, then no other sheikh would be able to get a murid. But Allah Ta'ala has created me for Ihya is Sunnah. So he was always focusing on how different ways to revive the Sunnah. So Mullah Abdul Rahman Jami Rahmatullah went to go meet him. And he saw that his horses are tied with silver rings, and he has beautiful tents, and the tent rings are also made of silver, and he has a fancy carpet upon which he sits. Tamilan Jaminata was surprised, and he saw this all from far away, and he turned back. He didn't even want to meet the sheikh. So he said in Persian that there can't really be a wali of Allah Ta'ala who has befriended the world so much, who is befriended and loves the world so much. So he said that to himself, and then he went away, went back. On his way back, he prayed Salah on the way, and he was tired, so he lay down to take a nap. When he lay down to take a nap, he saw a dream, and on the dream is the day of judgment, and everybody's out for themselves, and a lot of people came to Mullah Abdul Rahman Jami, and, "Oh, you owe me this right, and you owe me that right, and I have this right over you." And there were so many people that if Maulana Jami was to give them all of his good deeds, still he couldn't fulfill all the rights they were claiming over him. So in the dream he was very worried, "But what am I going to do?" Then he saw in the dream that there's a person coming who has hundreds and thousands of people following him in a procession, and he's coming on a beautiful mount and steed. So asked, "Who is that?" He found out that it was Khwaja Abdullah Abdullah Ahrar Rahmatullah. And then in the dream he stopped and he said, "Oh Maulana, what's the matter?" The Maulana said, "All these people have rights over me, and they didn't forgive me, and I'm running out of good deeds to give them." The Khwaja Abdullah Ahrar Rahmatullah told him that, "Okay, give them as many good deeds from my good deeds as you need." Then all of them became happy when they took however much they wanted, and Hazrat Khwaja Abdullah Ahrar still had mountains level of good deeds. Then he woke up. So Maulana Jami realized that, "No, I made a mistake. I will only get benefit from this sheikh." So he then turned back again and went back to Khwaja Abdullah Ahrar. Then he said, "Now I'm going to meet." So when he came and he met Khwaja So the Khwaja Abdullah asked him that, Mulana Jabi, when you came that first time, what did you say? What did you recite to yourself? And the awliya Allah, they have this ability to piercingly look into the hearts of people. To Allah Ta'ala messages them what people were saying. So they got the message, he got the message from Allah Ta'ala. So he said, oh Mawlana, what did you say? He said, no, Shaykh, I didn't say anything. And he said, no, I know you, tell me what you said. Recite those words to me. So after insisting, Mawlana Jami repeated the words that there cannot be a person who be a wali who has befriended and loves the world. So Hazrat Khwaja Abdullah Rahmatullah completed the poem that if he makes the dunya a friend, he makes it for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, not for the sake of his own nafs. So Khwaja Aranam Ta'ala, Allah Ta'ala given them a lot of wealth, but he used it for the sake of Allah Subhanahu Wa Ta'ala. Listen to his story. Once a person pitched a tent for him, and it was raining, then it started to rain. Not everybody else had a tent in that procession. So Khwaja Rahmatullah said that all of you come into my tent. And then they said that, what about you? He said that, I'm not 100% sure that the tent is fully pure. But you go in because you don't have the doubt. So he put all of the people in the tent, and he himself stayed outside and got wet in the rain. And this was just an excuse, he said, to send them inside. And all the time he remained outside. Then in the afternoon, when he used to go to his fruit orchards, gardens, there used to be so much summer, so much heat, that because of that the laborers and workers would always be sitting in different places of shade, looking for shade to sit. So they said that I went into the fruit gardens and orchards to check and see how the work is going. And he used to, from Fajr to Jasht, he would do his own work. And then when it became hot, he would get on his horse and he would ride towards the people. People thought that he was going to check on the fruit orchards and gardens. But he left with the niyat that all of the laborers will take a nap because I'm not here. Our elder, our Akbar Ulama Deoband, we have so many incidents and stories about them that we'll explain some few incidents quickly. That says Akbari Muhammad Tayyib Ramtai's father in law, his name was Mullah Mahmood Rampuri Ramtai. And he had come as a young man to study in Darul Uloom Deoband, but he was from a very well-off family. So when Sheikh Al-Hind Ramtai saw him, that he living with the ordinary students, like an ordinary person, but Sheikh Al-Hind still felt that he's come a very well-off family, we should try to accommodate him. So as Sheikh Al-Hind Ramtai went to his house, and he got a bed, which is we call charpai, like a type of bed, and he brought it into the madrasa with the intention that Mawlana Muhammad Rampuri would lie on the bed. So when Mawlana Muhammad Rampuri came to Sheikh Al-Hind, he asked Sheikh, why are you holding this bed? And Sheikh Al-Hind said, you take your bed, and we are also a Sahibzada. How to explain to you? Sheikh Al-Hind wanted to carry the bed for him. But then when he saw him coming, he knew that if he saw the Sheikh carrying the bed, he wouldn't let the Sheikh carry the bed. So he put it, and he would refuse to accept the bed. So instead of letting that happen, he put the bed down and told him that, pick up your bed. So when he ordered him to pick up the bed, he had no way to refuse to sleep on the bed as opposed to the floor. He had to pick up the bed and put it in the masjid, and he slept on the bed. Now imagine that I told you all of this for a travel companion, your companion and your eating, and those are just companions for a few hours. What about husband and wife, who are your lifelong companion? Now look, if the deen has taught so much respect and consideration for the person who is your companion for some limited period of time, how much will the deen stress how respectful and considerate you have to be for that spouse who is your companion for your entire lifetime, not limited time, but for your entire lifetime. So we should think like that. So first let's check ourselves on the small one, that how good were we, how good a companion are we to those with whom we only have limited companionship. From that we will be able to assess how good a companion we are to those to whom we have lifelong companionship. And you will see that this is very absent now. Sometimes in some home the husband is upset with the wife, in another home the wife is upset with the husband. Shaitan has placed anger in their feelings for each other, selfishness in their feelings for another. They're not considerate of each other, they're not respectful of each other. On small matters and small points they get extremely angry with each other. Now imagine that the wife is an alima and husband is alim, and even then they're not able to get along. So what does it mean? They both have knowledge of the deen. Don't they know what the rights each have over each other in deen? Don't they know what the roles and responsibilities are, whom Allah Ta'ala has made superior? So we want, what do you think, that just sitting at home you become Rabia Basriya, you view yourself to be so high, and at the same time you're so stubborn and selfish that you can't be considerate? So remember that that wife who gets upset at her husband over just a small point, this is an indication that she has a messed up brain. That Allah Ta'ala has made the husband the Amir of the family. He is the leader of the family. And you are being stubborn and rebellious with him? It means that if she's read deen, studied deen, but she hasn't learned deen. And she's taking the name of Islam, and she's trying to defend her actions in the name of Islam. You don't even know how to address your husband. You don't know how to be humble in front of your husband. Every younger should do respect of the elder, but she doesn't view herself as junior to her husband. She views everyone else as junior to her. Why? Because she has a fat nafs. And because her nafs is so big, then everybody's smaller than her. And we've seen that some women, they just get so upset at small things. They had to select between two items. It's a very simple thing, that the delicate sense that a woman has, a man doesn't have that. The women know how to pick the best color, and the men have no sense. So fine, you shouldn't get angry at your husband. So fine if he went and he got something that isn't as beautiful as you want. It's not something for you to erupt in anger over him. And we hear from our friends, so we know what goes on, that some people, their wives are doing zikr, and they study ilm, and they pray tahajjud, and they cry and make dua to Allah Ta'ala. But on the other hand, on the smallest thing, it's always critiquing the husband, upset with the husband, you don't understand, you don't know, you're no good. So okay, what do you mean he doesn't understand, he doesn't know? Is he your husband or not? First look at that. So if he's your husband, so where's your respect? Who is senior in the relationship? The husband. So if the husband is, strange thing we've observed is that when the husband is more noble, the wife gets bad, and where the wife is noble, the husband gets bad. Either way, there's a problem. And they're afraid of lizards and cockroaches, but they're not afraid of their own husband. So if the husband says something, they will cry tears as if they want to compete with Victoria Falls. And what is it? That, oh, he insulted me in front of the kids. So you feel your own insult so much that she herself will freely insult him in front of the kids. She never feels that. So the wife may be intelligent, she may be wise, she may make good decisions, but you can write this down, that barakah always lies in the decision of the husband. Because why? Our deen taught us that barakah lies in the decision of the emir, and Allah Ta'ala has made the husband the emir of the family. So no matter how intelligent the wife may think herself to be, how wise she thinks herself to be, barakah lies in the decision of the emir, and the emir of the family is the husband. So it's not, you should not review that, oh, who can come up with a better decision. There's no competition in that. You simply have to defer to the husband. Sayyidina Rasulullah said once that if it was permissible to do sajda to any being other than Allah Ta'ala, I would tell the wife she should do sajda to her husband. Now think in your heart, that is there any wife who has so much respect for her husband? No. That all she sees in her husband is the flaws and faults of the husband, the weaknesses of the husband. And it means that we don't have that loyalty and respect in our heart for the spouse the way Allah Ta'ala wants us to have. Allah Ta'ala mentioned in Quran, لِتَسْكُنُوا إِلَيْهَا, so the husband gets sukoon from the wife. How many wives are there who are making their husband life a sukoon? A husband comes home and she starts fighting with him. She has some complaint, she has some critique. Oh, slave of Allah, if you cannot give sukoon in your own home and family, then why do you complain that my husband is looking at other women and interested in other people? If this is his mistake, yes, but you also made a mistake. So that woman who fights with her husband in the morning, and the husband is an ordinary person and he goes to office, and in the office the secretary never fights with him, and the secretary smiles and says, oh sir, you look a bit worried today, is everything okay? Now what do you think is going to happen to the husband? Who is he going to be inclined towards, the wife or that secretary? So the wife should give sukoon to the husband at home, such that the second his husband gets done from work, he's racing home because he wants to be with her. As a Khwaja Abdul-Malik Siddiq, he had a murid. So the murid went to his sheikh and said, that Hazrat, that when I come towards you from the home, so I come to you very slowly and I have to really make myself come, but I come. But when you give me leave, I go home really fast. So the Khwaja Malik Sigramta, he told his murid that the reason is that the tawajjuh that your wife can give you, I can't give you that type of tawajjuh. So the wife becomes an alama, but she doesn't learn how to give this type of tawajjuh to her husband, that the husband wants to come home. And he, normally people work in the daytime, but this husband just doesn't want to go home, so he likes to spend overtime at the office. Why? Just because he doesn't want to go home. So to make the home a place of sukoon, that's the job of the wife. We've also seen husbands who did everything for the wife. They gave her money, car, clothing, shelter, they gave her everything. And he's even hired help for the children. He's had even people to help teach the children. He's taken care of everything. And even then, the wife talks rudely with the husband. Now tell me, can you call such a woman intelligent? So that husband has kept her so well, but she doesn't. She can always getting angry over small things. So may Allah Ta'ala rescue us from such anger, because the end result of such anger is devastating. And it can happen the other way. That sometimes it can happen the other way. And sometimes there are some women who are very stubborn, especially young couples, that the girl has insistent on her request. So fine, she may be able to be that. She may be able to dominate her husband. But if she wants to dominate her husband, she should give up her hope for Jannah. Now, come on the flip side, is the husband. Sometimes the wife is very pious, very serving, and the husband makes her life so difficult. The truth is that the husband is not even willing to listen to the wife. So even if the wife wants to speak, he doesn't even let her utter a word. But she's your wife. If you're not going to listen to her, then she's going to go talk to somebody else then. So how come you're opening the door for her to be inclined in the wrong direction? Why are you giving the shaitan the chance to create a split personality in her? She has some legitimate needs. She wants to share something with you. She wants to share her life with you. She wants to share what happened with the children today. A woman has a natural need that there should be a man in her life who she confides in and talks to, and if you as the husband don't become that man, she will look somewhere else to confide and talk to. So any husband who doesn't sit and listen to his wife, there is not such a foolish husband anywhere. And we have seen some husbands who are so foolish that they take more care of their car than they take care of their wife. If they were as caretaking of their wife, they would be as they were of the car, everything would be fine in their marriage. When the car needs petrol, they make sure they put it. If there's a small noise, slight rattling, they immediately take it to the mechanic and they want it to be fixed. But his wife has a fever, he doesn't care. Wife isn't feeling well, he doesn't care. Wife is slightly disturbed by something happened in the day, he doesn't care. There's a joke that if your own child cries, your heart hurts. If your neighbor's child cries, your head hurts. And if your wife cries, your head hurts. And if the neighbor's wife cries, your heart hurts for her. So why do people make these jokes? Because there's something there that if their wife doesn't give you love at home, then you will be attracted to the other women. So we have seen some husbands who their worldly punishment for the wife, they try to make the wife's life on earth like a prison. So don't think that the wife has no support. If her parents are near, or if her parents have passed away, Allah Ta'ala is her guardian. Even if her parents have passed away, and you married her in the name of Allah Ta'ala in Islamic nikah, Allah Ta'ala says in Quran, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسْأَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامَ, that you must fear Allah Ta'ala, who is going to ask you. She was not a slave that you bought her in the market. She was a free woman who you married in nikah out of the name of Allah Ta'ala. You went to her parents and made a proposal. You asked for her hand in marriage. And you promised that you would be a caretaking husband to her. Now that she has come to you in your home, now do you think that she is without any guardian who will ask you? Allah Ta'ala says that He will ask you. You will be asked about how you treat your wife by Allah Ta'ala. Let me tell you an example, that the wife was an alima and the husband was a hafiz, and they were pious. The hafiz used to live in a foreign country, and he used to come 2 to 3 times a year to visit his parents back home. And when his wife said that, "I also want to visit my parents," he wouldn't let her. In 7 years, he didn't let his wife meet her parents. Now, what type of justice is that? That you should take time out, take your wife with you, visit her parents, and then come back? He said no, that she should stay with the children. children. She should do this, she should do that. He would go alone, and 2 to 3 times he would meet his own parents. But he didn't let his wife meet her parents for 7 years. So if this isn't jail, then what is it? And outwardly, he's very religious, the husband. So how come the husband doesn't realize this injustice that he's doing? That you are all smiling with your friends and at work, but when you're at family, you have a stern appearance. And they even tell the Shaykh, when I'm with my friends, I'm always a happy person, but when I come home, I don't know, I'm always in a bad mood. So yes, Shaitan was made of fire, and he put some fire in you, and he's heating you up. And the husband can never give his wife a gift, he can never talk to her softly, he can never feed her, he can never smile, he doesn't know any of these things. And sometimes it's actually the fault of his mother-in-law and father-in-law, but he gets angry at his wife. Now what can she do? She's been so loyal to you, she's been of service to you for so long. And if there is some problem that you have with her father, what is her, it's not her fault. Why are you taking it out on her? And sometimes husbands make a very terrible mistake, is that for the smallest of things they threaten their wife, okay fine, I'm going to get married to a second wife. And they don't know how harmful this is. That husband who threatened his wife that I'll marry a second wife, that husband has given her a split personality. She's always in doubt, always skepticism, and the husband is always thinking that, and she's thinking that she should have a standby arrangement because maybe my husband will leave me for another woman. So now she's also looking for some backup. So now she would have never looked towards a non-mahram man. She was willing to be 100% loyal to you, but because you start saying, I will take a second wife, then she also start thinking. And then if ultimately it becomes like that, and then when the second wife comes, do you think she's coming out of Jannat as a whore? She's also human. And those who were unfair to their first wife, Allah Ta'ala takes care of them through the second wife. And is it, but he doesn't tell anybody that because he's too embarrassed to say, because he tried to make it sound like she was wonderful and he married her. So he can't even complain about the second one. He can complain about the first one, but how can he complain about the second one? She was his own choice. I said that I've never ever seen anyone who's had two wives who's happy. They say this, that they marry a second wife thinking it will make them happy. It won't make them happy. Yes, sometimes there may be some genuine reason that, okay, he can't have children from the first wife. Okay, you can get second wife for the sake of children or something like that. But if you have children and your first wife is beautiful and she's loving to you, then with all of that, you're still interested in a second wife. That's just your hirs, that's just your greed. But if a person does that, we've seen that even he cannot do so much work of deen, because now he's busy taking care of two households, so he has less time for deen. Hazrat Lamia used to tell the story. And once I have my own story that I observed with someone. So these are two stories that I will tell you, and then we will end for tonight. These are the stories of the people who want to do two marriages. Hazrat Ghulam Bin Ramta used to say that in our time, This was the time when all they didn't have all these things for children. The most thing you could do for your child is there was no entertainment games. The most is that somebody may bring a monkey and make the monkey play around, or there were different animal shows. And as he says, that even in our childhood, we lived in a good age like that. There was no real entertainment other than these small basic things. So once there was somebody like that who used to bring, they'd do a puppet show, and at the end of the puppet show, people would give them money. And he himself was married thrice, but one after the other, not simultaneously. So he said that once some people came and to show a puppet show, and we were a child, and we went to go see, and they had a lot of really give it wonderful show. And the one who was the state of the art puppeteer, what was that? That he had. Okay, and then it was this puppet show, it was like a carnival, like a circus, you can almost say. So then there was somebody who had a 40 foot high pole, and he planted it on the ground. And then one of them started climbing it up like as if he was a monkey, and he went all the way on the top of the pole. And when he was standing, sitting on the top of the, perched on top of the pole, then he had such perfect balance that then he laid on his back on top of that 40 foot high pole. He had such perfect balance that he wouldn't fall off, and he spread his hands and his legs, and he was lying out on there. Now this type of balance, this was a very amazing thing to see. So this was one of the features of the show. And so when he did this, all the audience was clapping. Wow. And then so somebody asked him, "Are you happy like this?" So he said, "Yes, I'm happy like this." Now look, now he has a pole in his back, and he's basically barely balancing, and he says, "Yes, I'm happy." So the person asked him, "Why are you happy like this?" And he said, "That person who has two wives like me, he's happy like this. He's better off up here on top of the pole." So Hazrat Mursanta, he said he witnessed this as a child when he went to the show. Second is that Hazrat himself saw that once in engineering we kept a boiler. There was a need for it. So mashallah, we found out. We hired an engineer in our plant who was in charge of the boiler room, and we found out later that he has two wives. One day he came to Hazrat and said, "Boss, that tonight we are sitting and waiting for some project to finish, so let me share with you a bit about myself." So I said, "Okay, go ahead." So he said that I live in Lahore, and I got married to my cousin, and she was beautiful and had a beautiful personality also, and she's pious, loyal, serving. She has every attribute you can think of. He himself mentioned it about his wife. And well, I also have children by her. And I have had few sons and had daughter. And we've been having a wonderfully happy married life. And he says, "But then I got transferred from Lahore to Takht Bhai, mountainous area near Swat. So then I went over there. Now the engineer's salary is good, especially when they're working on site and they get a company residence, company car, and they're doing well." He says, "Then once it was the summer vacations, so my wife, she told me that it's summer vacation, that look, let's go somewhere on vacation. And look, you can go with the kids for 2 months, you can go visit your parents, you can visit my parents. I can't go because I'm on site and I have to stay at the project." So she said, "Okay." So she took the children and went away on 2 months summer holiday. And meanwhile, I was at site, and right opposite our factory, there was a restaurant and they have famous this beef patty called chapli kebab. So I went to lunch and said, okay, let me eat the chapli kebab. So when I ate the chapli kebab and I was sitting there, and I saw there's a person sitting in front of me drinking tea. So when he saw me that I was eating alone and he was also alone, he sat down and joined me. And he introduced himself, I introduced myself, who are we, who are you, where are you from? He said, why are you eating here? And I said that, oh, my wife and kids have gone for 2 months summer holidays. So I said, okay, I'll eat at the restaurant today. So he listened to me and he said that, oh look, I have two wives. And I'm really enjoying. When I go to one wife, she's just so much service of me that she wants to surpass the other wife. Then I go to the other wife, she tries to be so nice to me so that she becomes my favorite. So each of them are trying to compete to be my favorite, so I'm just getting spoiled on both sides. I'm enjoying. And this is the dream that all men have. So he was sitting there and he's saying, this guy's telling me he's living the dream that every man has. And then again next day we met in the restaurant and again he sat with me and then again he started telling me his dream. So after a few days, and we would sit together over this meal, so one day he told me that if you want, she's gone for 2 months, I can find a nice second wife for you from this locality. And some of them, they're not so well off and they can't get their daughter married. You know, this is not such a very rich area, and you know how beautiful the women of this area are. So you can even keep her in her parents' house and you just support them with monthly support. And your wife will never know. So he was living the true dream and he painted such a beautiful picture to me that I was irresistible. So I said yes. So he found some girl and then I met the parents and they said, we are poor people and our daughter is young age and nobody's coming to marry her because we can't afford to get her married, but if you will financially take care of her, if she can keep staying with us, we have no problem with that. So I said, okay, whenever I need, I'll come to your house and spend the night. So then he took the girl and they went to an alim, and the Mulana read their nikah, and we started living as a wife, and I spent one month with her, and I really enjoyed. But by then, the summer holidays ended, and my first wife was time for her to come back. Then my first wife came back. Women are very clever. She came and she realized that, my husband looks like a new rejuvenated man. There's something going on. But she realized, and she didn't say anything, she just kept quiet. And she spent a few days like that, and it occurred to her in her mind, something is seriously wrong somewhere. So she started crying. And she found out, and within 1 week, she discovered who it was that what I did when she was away on vacation. So she discovered that I had taken a second wife. So when she found out, then she raised an uproar. And she was my first cousin also, so we were family. So she started calling the family members. Now his parents were angry with me, and my parents were also angry with me. So what's the matter with you? You had no reason. She's wonderful. You love her. She's good to you. You have kids. Why were you so foolish? So he said that my parents are upset with me. My in-laws are upset with me. My whole family is upset with me. My wife's upset with me. So much so my wife got so angry with me. She said that I'm not going to cook for you. You want her, you go eat her food. Go to her. Tell her to cook for you. So when she said that, then I started going to the second wife more often. And then second wife said that, when the first wife wasn't here, you came to me every day. And now since your first wife is back, you've come to me after 1 week. So she started fighting with me. So I was stunned. Now she's upset with me. And I'm fighting with the first wife, fighting with the second wife. And then I was fighting with both, so she was upset with me that there's no need for you to come anymore. And the first wife and I was hungry. And I said, let me go eat some chapli kebab, go back to that restaurant. So okay, I have no choice, I'll go have the chapli kebab. So I went to that restaurant, and that same guy who was sitting there drinking tea, he came and sat down with me again. So I was all disturbed and worried and stressed and tense. And he said, what's the matter? And I told him that you're asking me what's the matter. You painted this wonderful dream to me that I am getting here, spoiled from here, spoiled from there. They're competing with each other to be my favorite, and me must be the opposite. He says, this door's closed. She's closing her door to me. She's closing her door to me. And he listened to me and said, actually, that the same thing happened to me also. And I used to sit here and drink tea alone. I thought I need a companion. I need somebody to have the same sorrow as me. So I trapped you in this so you could be my tea drinking companion. So the purpose of telling you these stories was that if you threaten your wife that, oh, I'll get a second wife, you should never ever do that. And you should always remember that the Sharia has made the spouse the lifelong companion for another, and you have to own her. You have to own her good attributes, and you have to own her bad attributes as well, because she is yours. No human being is perfect. None of us is an angel. The wife should look at the husband, and if he has 70% good, he may have a few bad attributes. If the wife has 70 good attributes, she may have a few bad ones. If the husband has 70 good attributes, he may have a few bad ones. Sayyidina Rasulullah told us something very beautiful, that if you see any shortcoming in your wife, then you should look at her good attributes. You will easily see her good attributes. Always look, don't just look at the bad attributes, look at her good attributes. So when Allah Ta'ala has put love between the two of you, Allah has given you children, Allah has given you a good life, now you should focus your life on deen, on the work of deen. And our elders, they used to keep our wives so happy. How much the wife would keep the husband happy, the wife should look like Sayyidatana Khadijat al-Kubra radiallahu ta'ala anha. She showed the world how to keep the husband happy. She spent money on her husband. She used to give gifts to her husband. She was of service to her husband. And when her husband came back from the from the mountain of Hira, she consoled him. She was a source of comfort. That, oh, Allah Ta'ala will never let you go to waste. She started counting his attributes, praiseworthy attributes. And not just that she said few sentences, no. It comes to Hadith of Bukhari that she then practically took Sayyidina Rasulullah to a monk, and she said, oh, listen, oh monk, to what your uncle's son is saying. And the Prophet shared with the monk his experience. And the monk said, oh, that angel that came to you was the same angel that came to Musa alayhi salam, Jibreel. And oh, there is going to come a time when your community is going to kick you out. And the Prophet said, oh, they're going to expel me. And they said, yes, because that's what's written in our ancient scriptures, that that's what's going to happen to the last prophet, that first his community will spurn him and kick him out. So if a wife wants a role model, she could look at Sayyidatana Khadija al-Kubra, and if a husband wants, he should be like Sayyidina Rasulullah, his life is a role model. And then see how much pleasure you get of Allah Ta'ala. So Sayyidina Rasulullah used to remember his wife so much that once Aisha and then she saw that the Prophet was sitting, and he asked Aisha that, who is this woman whose voice I just heard, and her voice was reminding me of Khadija radhiyallahu anha. And Aisha said that, oh, that's her sister, and she came to meet, and sisters' voices resemble each other. So then the Prophet was surprised. Sayyidina Rasulullah said, So Aisha Rana was surprised, and she said that, how come you can't forget that old woman who you were once married to when you have such a young wife, beautiful wife like me? So the Prophet said that, oh Aisha, Khadija, she was my supporting companion when no one else supported me. She accepted Iman in me when nobody was accepting Iman in me. This is a wife that even after dying, when the husband thinks of them, they cry. This is the ideal wife. And the ideal husband? Umm Darda radiallahu ta'ala anha. She told Abu Darda radiallahu anhu, that first my parents gave me a nikah with you. I didn't know who you were, but my parents selected you, and I trusted my parents, so they got me married to you. Now on my own I want to marry you. So he said, what do you mean? You're already my wife and you want to do nikah with me? And she said, no, what I want is that I want that you say that in Jannat you will keep me as your wife. Now she, Abu Darda had won her heart over so much that she wanted that, I want this person, husband, to be my wife. This person to be my husband in Jannat. Once a Sahabi became Shaykh and his wife Sayyidina Naila, she had a lot of beauty. And she had such a beautiful smile that nobody else had such a beautiful smile as her. So many people came to propose for her, and she said no. That I saw my husband was so wonderful to me, I don't want to get married to anybody else. This is loyalty. That the husband should be like that, that the wife can never think of getting married to any other person, even after he dies. Dr. Abdul Hayy Arifin Amtaday, in his whole life, he never even used a stern tone with his wife. He never even changed from an affectionate tone. Normally that you have an affectionate tone, but sometimes you scold the wife. So he never ever changed his tone with his wife. All his life he spoke to his wife in an affectionate tone. So if the husband is like this, then the wife would herself want to do sajda. To keep your wife with love. And the love would ask that even one wife asked this question, that if the husband passes away first and the wife dies later, can the wife be buried in the same grave as her husband? Can you imagine how much that wife loves her husband that she wants to be together with him in the grave? So the Sharia said that, oh husband, you should be loving to your wife, and has told the wife that you should be loving to your husband, and you should forget and forgive and overlook each other's shortcomings for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. And then we'll end with one statement from Shaykh Shafali Tanvi Abdallah. He said that if once there was a case that there was a person who's Shaykh Shafali Tanvi mentioned this incident in one of his books, that there was a person and his wife betrayed him, and he would have been well within his right and justified to punish her and be angry with her, but she was apologetic and she accepted that I made a big blunder and I shouldn't have done that. And when he saw that she wasn't intelligent, she was remorseful, she was accepting her mistake, he said, okay, I forgive you for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, because you are Allah Ta'ala's slave. So then look, what happened is that after some time the husband passed away, and somebody saw that man in a dream and asked him that, oh, what happened? And he said that when I went in front of Allah Ta'ala and I was presented to him for judgment, Allah Ta'ala said that at this time when your wife, she made a blunder and you forgave her because you said that she was my slave, that okay, I view you as my slave and I will forgive you. You forgave her for my sake, so I will forgive you for that. So may Allah Ta'ala teach us how to be loving and affectionate and forgiving in our life, and whether they're companions of our gathering or companions on our journey or companions on our tariqah, and we have to take care of them. May Allah Ta'ala enable us to be careful, caring and considerate to our lifetime companion.
ان معتقفین کے لیے بھی اسی طرح محبت و پیار سے پیش آئیں گی.
I hope that the people of Itikaf will be careful and considerate to each other, and that all the wives of the people in Itikaf will be in good relationship with their wife. The Prophet said that when the husband looks at the wife and smiles, and the wife looks at the husband and smiles, Allah Ta'ala looks at both of them and smiles.
آؤ پھر اس والا دل بدل دے میرا غفلت میں ڈوبا دل بدل دے بدل دے دل کی دنیا دل بدل دے خدایا فضل فرما دل بدل دے گناہگاری میں کب تک عمر کاٹوں بدل دے میرا رستہ دل بدل دے سنوں میں نام تیرا دھڑکنوں میں مزا آ جائے مولا دل بدل دے ہٹا لوں آنکھ اپنی ماں سوا سے جیوں میں تیری خاطر دل بدل دے پڑا ہوں تیرے در پر دل شکستہ رہوں کیوں دل شکستہ دل بدل دے یہ کیسا دل ہے سینے میں الہی جو زندہ بھی ہے مردہ دل بدل دے کروں قربان اپنی ساری خوشیاں تو اپنا غم عطا کر دل بدل دے جو ہو دیدار تیرا روز محشر تو دیکھے مسکرا کر دل بدل دے سہل فرما مسلسل یاد اپنی اے اللہ فضل فرما دل بدل دے رہوں بیٹھا میں اپنا سر جھکا کر سرور ایسا عطا کر دل بدل دے تیرا ہو جام اتنی آرزو ہے بس اتنی ہے تمنا دل بدل دے میری فریاد سن لے میرے مولا
We are weak and sinning servants. Forgive us for our sins. Overlook our faults. Conceal our shortcomings. Yalla, purify our gaze. Yalla, purify our heart. Yalla, accept our breast for your love. Yalla, ignite the flame of love for you in our heart. Yalla, from the depth of our being, let us make zikr of you. From the depth of our ruh, we want to make zikr of you. From our very bones and flesh, we want to love you. Yalla, accept the fast that we fasted in Ramadan, the Taraweeh that we prayed in Ramadan, the Quran that we read in Ramadan, that all of these gatherings accept the giving and listening of these nasihat and advice. Yalla, accept the itikaf of the people who are sitting in itikaf. Yalla, in exchange for this, grant them your raza, Allah. Be pleased with them, Ya Allah. Yalla, your beloved Nabi Kareem Sassam told us that every night of Ramadan, hundreds of thousands of people are delivered and freed from Jahannam. And when it's the last night, then however many people were freed from the first night up till now, equally again as many people will be freed again tonight. Ya Rabbi Kareem, this is the last night of Ramadan. Ya Allah, the last night of Ramadan. Ya Rabbi Kareem, it's the last night of Ramadan. Ya Allah, forgive us, Ya Allah. Ya Allah, forgive us, Ya Allah. Save us, Ya Allah. Be kind with us, Ya Allah. Send your rahmah and mercy on us, Ya Allah. Ya Allah, we have spent so much time making sins, but Ya Allah, your mercy is greater than our sins. So forgive us, Ya Allah. Ya Allah, save us, Ya Allah. Rescue us from the fire of Jahannam. Ya Allah, out of your mercy, grant us admission to Jannah. Ya Allah, we ask that you accept our du'as through your mercy. Ya Allah, Eid is supposed to be a day of happiness, but happiness can only be for that person who is no longer going to be punished in Jahannam. Who is he? About that. Ya Allah, forgive us, Ya Allah. If you forgive us, then Eid will truly be a day of Eid for us. Eid will be a day of joy for us. Ya Allah, make Eid a day of joy for us. Forgive us, Ya Allah. Ya Rabbi Kareem, send your mercy on us, Ya Allah. Accept our du'as. Ya Allah, let us gaze upon the Kaaba. Let us present ourselves at Road of the Rasul. Ya Allah, we ask that you accept these du'as. Ya Allah, our parents, elders, teachers, mashayikh who have passed away, forgive them, Ya Allah. Those who you've already forgiven, grant them higher and higher levels of Jannah. Ya Allah, give us happily married lives at home. Let us fulfill the rights of one another. Ya Allah, on the day of judgment, save us from being embarrassed and disgraced. Ya Allah, grant us all the praiseworthy attributes. Rabbana taqabbal minna innaka antas samiul alim.
سيدنا محمد وآله وأصحابه أجمعين برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين.